Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
In this morning for Schlereth and Evans, here's Chad Andrus and Matt Smith.
Good morning to you and yours, Matt Smith.
Hey, where did we go?
And Chad Andrus in with you on this Thanksgiving morning. It's a nice day in Denver right now, about 32 degrees out there, and it will warm up a little bit, certainly, but you know, not too bad. I've seen much worse weather on Thanksgiving, so I'll take no snow and, you know, just nice and, you know, not too cold today, Chad.
What's the good time for a Turkey Bowl kickoff?
Well, it's kind of like, I feel like it's the same as winter golf rules. Like, you don't want to be out there too early. You got to probably wait till, like, 9-ish. I would say 9 is probably the earliest you want to kick off, and 10 is probably the best. What I would do is I'd probably go with like a 10 a.m. kickoff for a Turkey Bowl. I know that Bills and Lions starts at 10:30, but you're probably not going to miss a ton if you miss the first quarter of that. So you figure you kick off at 10, you play for what, like an hour or so. You're back in the house 11:15, 11:30. You catch the end of the first half and see if it's still a game right at that point. But one Denver Bronco, obviously we're talking about Melvin Gordon, disgruntled Denver Bronco, was released this week, weeks late, by the way, just in addition to all of the other things. It's Thanksgiving, but I'm not thankful for the way that the Broncos do every single thing late, Chad. It's exhausting, really, and it's kind of a joke at this point. I don't know what message you really sent to the entire team this week, and really to the fan base. Okay, Melvin fumbled again, right? Cost you in a big moment again, but we were all screaming at the top of our lungs weeks ago, and that's when it actually would have made a statement. Now it feels like a desperate move that I guess you had to do, but now you're banged up at that position even more so. So let's just start with your initial reaction to what you thought when you saw Melvin was released this week.
I wasn't surprised, and I obviously a lot of people have been calling for it for a long, long time because of the fumbles. But what's interesting is Mike Kliss, our Broncos insider from 9 News, when he spoke with Melvin and wrote about it, there may have been a message sent, but it's not the one that the fans have been screaming for over a month. Everybody wanted Melvin released because of fumbles.
Right.
And what did it cost the team? But from Melvin's own words, that was not brought up when he met with George Payton. It is more of a, we know you're not happy here. We know this hasn't been a good fit, and we respect you. We're going to let you move on and find a better situation and find joy in football again, because we're going nowhere. There's no point in you playing for this team that is not going to make a playoff push as a veteran. All you're doing is taking heat from the fans. All you're doing is becoming more miserable and hearing about the fumble stuff all the time and having a bad relationship, so there's no point in putting you through that, is the way it's presented by Kliss when he spoke with Melvin Gordon. So the message being sent is George Payton going, hey, you're a good part of this locker room and a good part of this team for 3 years, and we're going to take care of you and allow you to be free of this weight on your shoulder. Not, you're cut because you fumble.
I don't know how much I believe from George Payton, quite frankly, anymore. George Payton is always the guy to say really nice things about you, even when you're on your way out the door. What's the point in that moment of George Payton to criticize his fumbling, right? Like, everybody gets it. Melvin gets it. George Payton kind of talks out of both sides of his mouth sometimes. And remember when Vic Fangio got fired and he said, there isn't a finer football coach I've ever been around? It's like, really, bro? You just fired this guy.
Okay, but isn't this what everyone applauded Tim Conley for so long? Being a culture guy? being a guy that everybody respected about how they go about their business and how they treat everyone in the organization, right? This is what everybody was so thrilled that Tim Connelly did with the Denver Nuggets, and he was a good guy, and they treated people right, along with falling backwards into Jokic, right?
Well, I will say, here's all I'll say, and I want to let you finish. The only thing I would say, the difference between Peyton and Connelly is sincerity. I think that's a big difference, and I want to hear what the rest you have to say.
Well, I think we're still finding out about George Payton.
Yes.
Because we don't really know what the group of misfit toys he was handed with, how it fits together, and how he can repair it and make it work, right? So I think we're still too early in that process and that relationship to know what is sincere and what isn't. And maybe he's just being a good guy because there's no reason to be a bad guy to Melvin Gordon because he's leaving. You're not going to deal with him. So what's the point?
I think that's it.
And screaming and yelling and, you know, throwing a chair across the room and saying, you know, you're bleeping fumbles. Get out of here. Right. There's no point in doing that.
No.
Right. But when you're talking about a message that it sends, the message that comes out of it being presented this way is we take care of guys to put them in the best situation.
Sure.
Not you're accountable because you fumbled. Because that's the way it's presented. And see, that's the difference, right? The fans have been screaming from the mountaintops for a month or more, 6 weeks or more, whatever, to cut Melvin Gordon because of fumbles and make him accountable and send that message to the team that you've got to be better. But that message is not sent because it's the soft delivery of this just doesn't work. We're not going anywhere as a team, so there's no point in you being here anymore. Be free of this and go continue somewhere else.
But there's more to it, and I think this is why I bring up sincerity is because I think you're right. But the message doesn't get sent because the season is over. That's the biggest difference, and that's where even Melvin Gordon sitting there getting sunshine blown up his ass by George Payton understands that, hey, this guy is being a nice guy. I full well understand. I put the ball on the ground 12 times with the Denver Broncos. Tons led to scoop and scores, and they were all in crucial situations. And look, how many we talk about the almost touchdowns for this offense. How many almost fumbles did Melvin have? Melvin had 5 fumbles this year. How many almost fumbles? He dropped the ball against San Francisco. He dropped the ball against Tennessee twice, right? How many bobbles? And so at a certain point in time, you have to send a message that we value possession here. We treat the football like gold. And Melvin didn't. And there was a significant problem with technique in the way that he chose to cover up the football that allowed for a lot of this stuff. And even Melvin sitting face to face across the desk from a guy telling him all these, hey, look, you're a veteran. Maybe Melvin Gordon's massive ego, maybe he bought that hook, line, and sinker, but we don't. And I think some of these quotes from Kliss are fascinating. I think we should read them, quite frankly, Chad. To Kliss, Melvin Gordon said, I just want to thank my teammates. It's been a hard 3 years for me there, with this year being the hardest. I'm not mad. I came here, and I was never on good terms with the fans, but I want to let them know I'm not upset with how they treated me. It's part of the game. They come with high expectations for their players, and I didn't reach those. It's no hard feelings. I want to read one part of that again. I came here and was never on good terms with the fans, but I want to let them know I'm not upset with how they treated me. What are you talking about, Melvin? How they treated you? How about how you treated them? You were constantly insecure. You were never confident. You got a huge DUI going way too fast down Spear. And the first thing you said to the cop was, I'm in a training camp competition. Not, I'm so sorry, or, I made a huge mistake. Or the first thing, you were complaining about being in a competition, man. Like, people don't care. That was a really bad foot, right? And not to mention, Melvin was a Charger. People were rooting against Melvin Gordon. It's very similar to what happened with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson embarrassed the Broncos in their biggest loss of all time
fans were so desperate and gave him a chance. He talked so much mess, came in here with so much hype, and has done nothing but let them down. So when you come in and are a letdown and have a bad attitude, I think Melvin Gordon was a productive player in his career. I like Melvin Gordon. But if we're talking about a delusional player, I can't think of many better examples than Melvin Gordon.
I think there's a lot to unpack on this, right? When you talk about him being a Charger, there was probably more interest, concern, fan emotion, angst, disgust, hate, whatever you want to say about a division rival player from Bronco fans about Melvin Gordon as a Charger than there ever was from his own fan base as a Charger.
Right.
There was zero pressure. There were zero stakes. There was zero anything.
Very good
to play football. Right. So coming to Denver is a totally different environment where there is an expectation. There is a fan base that pays attention to the team and the game and the sport and understands how it works and expects you to perform at a certain level. So coming into that from no expectation, no interest whatsoever, another side distraction that's not any different than, you know, SeaWorld or Disneyland.
Right. Right.
When you're a Charger,
yeah,
to coming here where there is the ultimate expectation is a big difference. I'm not saying that's an excuse for Melvin Gordon. I'm just saying that is a change in the scenery that I don't think he was prepared for. I don't think he had any idea of. And when he makes these statements about how the fans treated me, it's not something he had ever experienced. He is looking at it from the lens of I came in as a Charger and the people that were Charger fans were all supportive because there's no expectation. There's, you know, there's no history.
And he was a productive player.
And he's a productive player. So everything was all sunshine and roses no matter when or where they failed.
Right.
Right? That's not the case here. This is a different environment. So I don't think he was prepared and did not have the proper expectation level for, hey, the stakes have been ramped up. Like, it's, you can't just pass the test here. Like, you've got to excel or it's not going to be good enough. So that's one element that I think coming from where he came from was not prepared for, and I don't think it was ever prepared for and fully understood how the fans view this team and how much the fans are invested in this team.
Yeah, and I think another part of it is I struggled to think of an example. And Dante, Chad, if you guys think of anything, chime in here. I struggle to think of an example of another running back who has cost their team more games. I can think of about five games that Melvin Gordon in over his Broncos career has cost them, right? Big moments. I think really back to that Cincinnati game last year, right? Huge fumble. Okay, Albert Okwuegbunam missed the block, but hey man, hold on to the ball, right? I mean, you could say the same thing about last week. You could say the same thing, but you can't have that position cost you games. And first of all, you just brought up a really good point. There were no expectations. Guess what happened when he got here? He got paid $8 million a year. That was a really big number at a position that the Broncos had some depth at. In fact, at a position that the Broncos had spent significant draft capital over the prior 5 years on that position. And then they went out and gave Melvin a huge contract, right? So you got paid at a position when a lot of people felt you were overpaid, especially at a position that you had depth at, and there were some younger guys here that had been productive to a degree, certainly hadn't had the success Melvin did. But I think that you talk about, I mean, it's the same thing with Russ, right? You get paid a lot. It definitely raises the expectations, and that's what happened. And I think there's a couple other interesting comments here from Melvin to Kliss, but I think a lot of that, like you just mentioned, I think it was a great point, Chad.
The Philip Lindsay thing is the other issue.
Yeah.
That was unique to Denver.
Yeah.
Right, because he is the hometown hero.
Yeah.
Right? High school, college, you know, undrafted to the Pro Bowl. Right? That is
Mr. Colorado.
Yes, that is Mr. Colorado, 100%. And everybody loved that guy. He's a great guy, and he produced. Right? That angle combined with the fan expectation, the money, everything you're talking about coming from San Diego, right? There is a series of events. There's a lot of elements going into this that make it difficult for Melvin Gordon to understand why he was received the way he was received.
Right, because it's not very often that you get the $8 million deal and you're not the favorite,
but
right?
Here's the other element that I think the fan base largely has overlooked when we've all been screaming for Melvin to go for the better part of 2 months. The reason he got paid, like you had said, the reason he was given the job, the reason he was brought back, is because he has breakaway speed and has proven to be a productive NFL player at a high level. This is a team, when you try to look at it from the George Payton point of view, that does not have any playmakers. They don't have anybody that can break a game wide open. They don't have any offensive threat. So the reason they may have hung on to him a lot longer than any fan wanted to is because what else you got? You got nobody that can run away from anybody.
But Melvin can't anymore either, to be fair. At one point, with this offensive line,
he cannot. Well, that is correct.
But with this offense, he cannot. But it's also mentality, right? I mean, if you fumble so many times and you're really worried about dropping it and fighting for extra yardage and maybe breaking the tackle and busting it out, there was a mental block there. He averaged his career worst yards per carry this season, right? I think there are some interesting comments, and let's get to some of these other ones because it's more than just Melvin Gordon. That chapter is closed. But I think what he said about some of these, what still remains is fascinating. Quote, and this is from Mike Kliss's piece on 9 News. Kliss says, quote, quoting Melvin Gordon, as far as the staff, there were times I felt like I was a scapegoat. But respectably speaking, I hope I did save them some time because Nathaniel Hackett, a good dude, that staff, they're great dudes. They just weren't great for me, but I respect those guys. It was hard there for me, but I respect that organization. They gave me a chance to keep playing my dream. Melvin continues, for the guys' sake, talking about his teammates, I hope the coaches do stay around because it's hard to get your foot in with other coaches. I'm a prime example. Whether you're a great player, a good player, an average player, you don't always fit right with the staff they bring in, and that brings problems. You see the situation I'm in, and I don't wish that on any player. So I hope they make it work for the guys' sake.
What's interesting about these comments is I think the viewpoint of Broncos fans, of Broncos country, for so long has been, this guy doesn't get it. This guy doesn't get it. Melvin Gordon doesn't get it. Like, he does not understand. But when you hear him say things like this, is that still what you think after the fact? Right? To me, I think he's got a pretty decent perspective on things. And look, I'm not here today to be the Melvin Gordon defender.
Sure.
I'm just trying to put it in its proper context.
Understood.
And understand why he was here as long as he was here and what has gone into this whole thing. Right? I think we're ready to move on from Melvin Gordon. But the reason we are now ready to move on from Melvin Gordon from the Broncos standpoint certainly appears that because the season is not going anywhere. That's why. That's what is being delivered through Mike Kliss here, is that he's not here anymore because there's no reason. The reason he was here as long as he was is because they don't have anybody else. They don't have anybody that can carry a load. They don't have anybody that can make plays. They don't have offensive threats.
Right.
But now it don't matter.
Right.
You're pushing Seattle up that draft board, baby. Yeah. That's all you're doing the rest of the season.
And truthfully, keeping Melvin Gordon, if anything, would have probably served to make that draft pick better because it was going nowhere in a hurry here with the Broncos. I mean, he was the worst starting running back in the league this year. The fact that he still received starting duties after complaining this year, after whining and pouting on the sideline and then was made the starter, that was another example of pathetic accountability from the coaching staff. They had many times that they could have cut ties with him. I think after the San Francisco game, I would have let Melvin go. He almost fumbled the game away on the drive they went down and won, and that would have been his second fumble. If you remember, he had a fumble, what was it, right on the goal line that Russ jumped on top of, right? Wasn't that game? And so when I look at it, Chad, there were so many times for so many different reasons that he would have been the prime example. You always hear when somebody, like a new boss comes in the job, sometimes, you know, you got to make an example out of somebody and get rid of them, right? Well, you brought Melvin back, and if you had to get rid of him so early, it would make you look pretty foolish, right? And that's another example of a situation where George Payton is evaluating one of his decisions and having to cut ties with it way, 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 way earlier than he anticipated.
He's also a guy that clearly had good relationships in the locker room.
Yeah, that's true.
On his side and on all teammates' sides by all accounts, right? So, look, I know it was way too long for a lot of people, but the statement, what I come back to, that is now sent, especially when you read what Mike Kliss wrote, the statement that is now sent is that we're not going anywhere. We've punted on the rest of the season rather than a month, 6 weeks ago. You can't fumble. You have to be accountable here when there was time to still turn things around. And that's the difference in the timing of the release.
Exactly. Exactly. What does it do now? What does it do now? I think it makes you look foolish as an organization now. You would probably have been better served just sitting him on the bench. You owe Melvin $1 million right now until somebody picks him up, right? Because you're still on the hook for that. And I imagine Melvin probably will get picked up by somebody. I think the Ravens might even go and get him. I think that's probably the team that makes the most sense. They've been banged up all over that running back room. I'd like to see that for him, and that's probably a good fit. But the point is that when you enable this kind of behavior, which I believe they did with Melvin Gordon, it's an indication that maybe you're enabling other things, like your $250 million quarterback who's coming out with catchphrases and doing all this stuff before you even step foot on the field, right? Hey, let's make you earn it, right? But that's kind of where we're at with the Broncos in this regime, is that they have really just delved full on into the player empowerment angle. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but the problem is, there's no strong leadership at the top. And when you don't have that strong leadership, if you empower, the inmates run the asylum. And I think that's part of what we're seeing with Nathaniel Hackett's team this season, is that he's enabled these guys just a bit too much instead of putting structure. But the problem is, Chad, I don't think he knows how to do that. And that's why we are where we are.
Players run the team, inmates run the asylum, whatever. A lot of places in pro sports.
Sure.
But when the players can play and the team wins, it's manageable.
Right.
Right now, the players can't play.
But typically, why does a team win? Because you have strong leadership. And I don't think the Broncos have that, Nathaniel Hackett. I just don't. Do you?
No, I don't. So I was really surprised by Gordon's comments on his way out the door. He didn't have to say any of that. And he's been nothing but positive about Hackett and the staff and everyone here as he's leaving. Now, maybe that is, you know, Melvin putting on the charm and the smile to sound good and look a little better when he's fumbled 12 times, like you said, to try and get another job. Look, I'm not a problem.
Yeah, I'm not a malcontent.
I'm not upset. Look, I'm a happy guy. These guys were great. It just wasn't a good fit, right? Maybe it is a little bit of charm from Melvin Gordon and a bit of a PR spin, but he didn't have to say those things.
One texter brings up a great point, and it was to something you said a little bit earlier in this segment. This from the 303, great points on Melvin G. I think you can say the same thing about this coaching staff. They had no idea of how intense the fans and media were going to be.
Oh, that's crystal clear.
I think that's accurate assessment.
We've been through two Raider weeks, and Hackett just completely shied away from anything.
Right.
In fact, the opposite way. Well, my dad coached for the Raiders.
Right.
It was fun when I was a kid. Like, no. That, you cannot say that here. You cannot say that to this fan base. Just no comprehension, no read of the room, no understanding of what it means to the people that have followed this team for 60 years.
You want to break these games down today, this NFL slate?
Well, if we have to.
All right, we'll do it next. Matt Smith and Chad Andrus on a very happy Thanksgiving.
In this morning for Schlereth and Evans, here's Chad Andrus and Matt Smith.
Yeah.
story?
Always up for a story.
Always up for a story. So, I turned 30 Sunday. And thank you. So, I wasn't fishing for it, but I appreciate it. So, we went out for dinner on Monday night, and we went to Benihana, because that's where we normally celebrate birthdays. Pretty common place to do it. We've been going there for years and years and years. So my folks ended up surprising me, invited a couple of my buddies, which was nice. Never really get, you know, time with them anymore. Everybody I know at this point's in a, you know, long-term relationship and everything like that. And I'm out here grinding and working. So I don't really see a bunch of those guys anymore. So everybody, they brought them together and we sat down for dinner and the chef came over to the table after about an hour of waiting, and we could all tell something was wrong right away. He had a bit of an attitude. He was not responsive right away. I said a few things to him, and he just, I thought maybe he was hard of hearing. Maybe he didn't hear me. And then he started going around the table, and they say, okay, you got the, you know, steak, and you got the chicken, and that's typically when you tell the chef how you'd like your food prepared, right? If I have steak, I want it, you know, maybe medium, you know, well done, whatever you want. So someone in our group requested, I think it was no mushrooms in their meal. And he stared like a death stare at my friend. And I said, huh, okay, that's really weird. And he blew him off. And then he went to the next person. And then I said, no. Hold on, you know, I just want to make sure you got that, because we're about to spend a couple $100 at your restaurant. I want our guests to enjoy their dinner. So he kind of blew us off, and then first thing he does is he gets all of the meat on the grill, which is not what you do at Benihana. You're rice first, you know, we could tell he wasn't preparing right, right? And so then he finishes the rice, he doesn't scrape the grill, he throws more meat down, he throws the shrimp, the scallops, he's got everything going at the same time, which I've never seen any chef, hibachi chef, do. And that was a big red flag, right? And so he was being rude, he was being unresponsive, and clearly he, you know, something, he was having a bad day, it was Monday night. And look, we're not unreasonable people. You know, you're a human being. You're entitled to have bad days. But if you're in customer service and food service, you should be respectful and, you know, kind to your customers. However, everybody has their moments. So we were all having a nice time. We said, you know what? We'll make the best of it no matter what. So then my mother, whose birthday it was, because my birthday is the 20th, hers is the 21st. So my mom says to the chef, she says, would you mind just cutting the scallops in half? Because they were big pieces and she, you know, cook them on both sides. Really an innocuous request, right? He takes a beat. He doesn't look at her, doesn't respond, and then says, I'm not going to do that. And we were all taken aback. And then we asked again, would you mind, you know, he said, would you mind cutting them in half? He says, and then second time, no. At this point, I'd had enough. I wasn't ready to make a scene, but you were rude, unresponsive all night long. And then finally, you've got the knife in your hand. It would take you all of 10 seconds. I'm not going to do that. Never heard that before in my life. So I said to the guy, I said, are you serious? Didn't respond to me. And I said, sir, I don't know if we said something to offend you or if you're having a bad day, but you've had an attitude the entire time that you've been at this table. We're about to spend several hundred dollars at your restaurant. We've got not one, but two birthdays here. You know, the least you could do is be a little kind and respectful. And then he didn't respond again. And he's got all the food. Doesn't flip anything. It's all burning. I stood up and I said, sir, you need to leave this table right now. And he looked at me and he said, do you want a different chef? And in unison, 10 people at the table, everybody, yes, absolutely, please. He goes away. They send some guy out from the back who clearly was in the middle of his own dinner. And meanwhile, he walks away while all the food is just burning on the grill. So now we've got a smoking grill. They've got to throw all the food away because the food is all ruined. 2 seconds later, the guy, the manager, turns around and sends the same chef to a different table. I'm telling you right now, this was a scary individual.
I'm just letting you know, this guy had some wires crossed. You don't just ignore people like that, especially in that job, without being a little, you know, a couple ticks from center. They didn't end up comping our meal at all. They took less than 20% off. And we were there for 4 hours. 4 hours. We sat down, reservation 6:45. We didn't leave till 11 o'clock because they had to cook our dinner twice. They took off 15% of the bill.
Oh, boy. I will say this. That is the one and only time where you can really confront and get into the chef.
Right.
Because, one, they're right in front of you.
Sure.
But, two, you can see the food.
Right. Right. Right.
It's not behind a wall somewhere.
Right.
Not behind a closed door where they can do whatever they want with it. But you can see what's happening with the food in front of you.
Right. I wasn't rude to the guy. I was, in fact, speaking just to him like I am right now. I should have been very stern. But at the same time, I'm not going to start yelling at a guy who's got four knives in a holster and a big one in his hand. You know what I mean? I know better than that. But either way, I was just blown away by the lack of customer service. And it was pathetic. And quite honestly, I have no interest in going back there ever again. So there's my quick story for you about a horrific dining experience.
Hey, just a public service announcement. If you're one of those people that gets into the Black Friday stuff and gets into the shopping, whether it starts tonight or tomorrow or this weekend, just keep in mind, it's a very different world out there from customer service and how many employees are on hand at different places.
No question.
Their tolerance for stuff because of how they've been worked and what they've been paid. I waited in line at a pharmacy yesterday for over an hour. Wow. So, you know, it's just very different than what people grew accustomed to in this country, in this state, in this area for a long, long, long time. We live in a different society now.
Yeah.
Things take a lot longer.
Yeah.
Things are much more difficult to process. And there are a lot of really good people out there doing the best they can. But then there are other horror stories.
So, yeah.
Like, if you dare venture out this weekend, just
know it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, be prepared.
It's a mixed bag. Anyway, I just was thinking about a few things today, and I hope you are having or set to have a great Thanksgiving with you and yours, whatever it is that you're doing. Join in on the RamosLaw.com text line 303-713-1043. I felt like I had to share that story because it was quite literally unbelievable. I've never had quite that experience in food service. I've had some bad ones, but that was right up there among one of the worst experiences I've had. Now I'm curious, on the text line, there's a couple people that said, one guy's got ribs going because we spoke about ribs a little bit earlier. And someone else said that they're making tamales with their family. Where do you land on tamales as a Thanksgiving food?
Anything you want for Thanksgiving. Look, I'm not going to be a stickler here and say you got to have turkey and stuffing and gravy and mashed potatoes. Oh, look, that's great if you do that and you're a traditionalist and you put the time and the effort in. I don't care what you eat. I don't care if you have top ramen. Like, it doesn't matter to me what you want for your Thanksgiving. Like, if you participate in the spirit of the holiday and you have gratitude and you're thankful for everything you've been given in this life and you want to watch some football, we're cool, man. Have whatever you want.
I'm with you.
I'm not with you. I'm not going to tell
you. I'm not judging at all. Those tamales, hey, man, that sounds pretty good. Sounds better than turkey to me today, to be quite honest with you.
Okay, so who's ever had a bad homemade tamale?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't exist.
No.
Right? So you know it's going to be good.
Yes. Especially if you've been up this early making tamales. You know that's going to be a solid meal. Would tamales suit you for a Thanksgiving dinner, Dante?
That sounds incredible. I love tamales.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, look, whatever. See, you got to branch out a little bit. But if you want to go traditional, fine with me. There's plenty of people out there going to traditional. But if you've got a different Thanksgiving dinner than turkey, I want to hear about it on the RamosLaw.com text line. Because I don't know what I'm making for dinner yet, and I need some ideas. Like, I don't have plans yet. I always do things late. So Thanksgiving, at this point, I'm not going to go out and make a three-course meal. But if you have some good ideas, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. I am. You still don't know what's on the menu at your house?
No idea.
You said it's a European-themed menu. Is that right?
It's going to be largely Italian.
Largely Italian.
Pasta?
Probably. My daughter was in charge, so that's probably the direction it's headed. Now, it's not going to be pizza. Okay. We've already had pizza this week.
Pasta.
Pizza.
Okay.
It'll be some form of pasta or gnocchi or something like that.
And gnocchi. That sounds good. A little gnocchi. I could do that for Thanksgiving. That's a good substitute for turkey. All right, I know we got dovetailed a little bit with that story, but we're going to preview this NFL slate today. We've got Bills-Lions. Are you ready? We've got Giants-Cowboys. Oh, boy. And then we've got Patriots and Vikings as the nightcap. And there's tons of interesting numbers and notes on these games and maybe even a play or two, because I know that there's going to be a moment today when you're going to need something else to do rather than talk to Aunt Edna for 2.5 hours about her latest knitting projects. That'll be next on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
In this morning for Schlereth and Evans, here's Chad Andrus and Matt Smith.
Matt Smith and Chad Andrus in with you. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Dante Gomez also in here with us this morning. Looks like it's going to shape up. Looks like some of those clouds are looking like they want to go away. A little blue sky peeking through. So I don't know what the weather actually is going to be today here in the Mile High City. But it kind of feels like one of those days is going to be nice out there, doesn't it?
The odds are good, man.
The odds are good. You know who else?
300 days of sun a year.
300, man. I know. It's going to be so nice. I guess today
When in doubt, take your sunglasses.
I guess the high for today is 43, and it looks like no clouds in the sky this afternoon. So maybe even an afternoon turkey bowl might be a good thing. Maybe that's like we talked about a 9 a.m. would be the earliest kickoff time for your turkey bowl, but I guess you could do it in the afternoon as well, maybe between the Buffalo and Detroit game, maybe at the end of the Buffalo-Detroit game if that thing gets out of hands.
Well, it all depends on when you eat, right?
That's true.
When do most people eat? Some people eat more around lunchtime. Some people eat in the middle of the afternoon. Some people wait for a dinner, right? It depends on the schedule of the Thanksgiving dinner because nobody's playing after. Right, that's just done, right? I don't care what you're eating. You're not going out there and playing and getting exercise after. It's always got to be before. So depending on the time of your dinner is going to dictate probably the time of your turkey bowl. I do think that the first game, Bills-Lions, has the potential to be easily the most entertaining of the day. And I think we're probably going to see some points, right? It's got a 54.5 total on it. If you're going to pay attention, that would probably be the one I would focus in on watching.
Gosh, I'm stunned. And by the way, well done. Hat tip to you, Dante. This is the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's what it was, right? Yeah, okay. All right, I'll take it. So let's take a little lap around the league today, shall we? We'll start with a game that you just mentioned. Buffalo and Detroit. The 7-3 Bills are back in Detroit at the 4-6 Lions. Of course, Buffalo was there after their game last week got rescheduled and moved to Detroit because of the snowstorm. They took care of Cleveland, and then they went home. For some reason, the Buffalo Bills went home and didn't just stay in Detroit. So they flew back yesterday, and they will face the Detroit Lions. The Lions, after a 1-6 start, are three games. I guess they've won three games in a row. I don't know where I was going with that. They've won three games in a row, and they're trying to win four in a row, which, I mean, are the Lions ever going to win four in a row? No. The line is about 10 right now,
nine
I believe.
Half,
is it 9.5? And so this is one of those games where you're going to see a lot of the public jump on 9.5, and I imagine you're going to see the line stay at 9.5 so they can draw that type of action, wouldn't you?
I can understand why you wouldn't want to stay in Detroit. But you were going back to Buffalo where there was 6 feet of snow last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, that's like Sophie's choice between Detroit and Buffalo.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of places it is back up to 10. I think the familiarity of being at Ford Field last week makes this less of what a normal road game would be.
Right.
And, again, does anybody really think the Lions are going to win four in a row?
Thanksgiving in Detroit. It's like spending it in the Bahamas. It really is. The Lions are looking for their third straight game with 30 points, which would be their longest single-season streak since 1997. A big reason they're piling up points is running back Jamal Williams, whose 12 rushing touchdowns this year are the most in the NFL and the sixth most in a single season in franchise history. And that's impressive considering Barry Sanders was a Detroit Lion. All right, we're going to go around the room here. Bills and Lions. Chad Andrus, Dante Gomez. We'll start with you, Chad. Who do you got?
Bills. Bills.
Bills and the points?
No, I would take the Lions in the 10, hoping for a shootout. Maybe like a 36-27 game, something really high scoring. But I would take the Lions in the 10.
You've got the Lions putting up 27 on Buffalo's defense?
They're like a top five offense when St. Brown plays.
Dante, do you believe in the Lions as much as Chad does?
I think they keep it close.
You think they keep it close as well? Do you think they cover the spread?
I do. Well, I mean, I would hope keeping it close means 10.
I mean, yeah, but to me, Bills-Lions close is like 14, right? Like, it's Bills-Lions. It's Josh Allen and Jared Goff.
Is it Josh Allen?
Josh Allen's a little nicked up.
Is it Josh Allen?
Yeah. See, I'm glad you guys are with me on this. Josh Allen is pressing more than any player in the NFL right now. I really think he is. I think he's trying to make up for last year's loss to Kansas City every single week. I really think that's what he's trying to do.
What it's going to get him is another trip to Kansas City.
You better believe it. You better believe it. I'm going to lay the points here with Buffalo. I'm going to believe in Buffalo. I think in the second half they end up pulling away. I know that the Lions, like you said, they've got Amon-Ra St. Brown back. But at the same time, for me, that's Josh Allen and the Bills who just played there a few days ago. That's a pseudo home game as far as I'm concerned. I got Buffalo and I got Buffalo covering the spread. Giants, Cowboys. It's a battle of 7-3 teams. It's not what the NFL thought it was going to be at the beginning of the season. That is for sure. I guarantee you when they scheduled Giants-Cowboys, it wasn't because they thought it was going to be a premier marquee matchup like this one is. The Cowboys have won 5 straight against the Giants at AT&T Stadium and 11 of 12 overall against their NFC rivals. This will be the two teams' first Thanksgiving meeting since 92, which was a 30-3 Dallas win. But the holiday has not been kind to the Cowboys of late. They've lost 3 straight Thanksgiving Day games, their longest such streak since dropping 4 in a row from 86 to 89. There's something about the Silver Star, when that spotlight hits it, Chad, Dante, those Cowboys just shrink. They shrink.
Well, I'm old enough to remember the TV drama, Dallas.
And, yeah.
You know, they
it's
make
Dallas.
It makes good television.
Yeah.
Right? It makes things full of drama. Right?
Yeah.
And close games. And that's what the Cowboys do when they're in the spotlight. There's drama. That's just the way that organization has always operated. They'll win the game today. They won't cover the 10.
They won't cover the 10.
Well, laying 10 points in the NFL is that you're not gonna have a growing bankroll if you continually lay 10 points in the NFL. Giants have had a horseshoe in their pocket all year long, and they managed to win 7 out of 10 and keep everything else relatively close. I'm gonna take the points again,
Dante. I like the points too. I think Thanksgiving, no one really gets blown out. I think they just want to win however they can win.
They want to win however they can win. If I had to play one side, God, it'd make me sick to take the Giants because I just don't trust them. I had up until last week, and then you go and you lose to Jared Goff at home. That's not good. That's not good at all. I'll give you a little number on this game. No quarterback throws touchdowns at a higher rate against the Blitz since the start of last season than Dak Prescott. He has thrown for 25 touchdowns against the Blitz in that time frame, which is the most in the NFL. That could be an issue for New York today as the Giants bring the Blitz at the NFL's highest rate, 43%. I'd feel comfortable taking Dallas in a teaser. I think this is still a 10. Is this a 10-point game at this point?
Yeah, it's a 10.
It's a 10. All right, I'm going to, gosh, I feel sick about it, but I guess I'll take. No, I'm taking the Cowboys. I don't believe the Giants. It's 10 points. It's a divisional game. I get it. Gosh, I wouldn't play this. I wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole, this line. Personally, are you going to play this one today?
No
chance.
I'm not going to play any of these games today, but if you choose to do so.
Not even a little teaser?
You can't. Look, I don't know how much those of you listening today engage in such stuff. If you do, you're well aware of this. Don't do teasers that don't take it through the key numbers. If you're teasing Buffalo or Dallas down, you're still above 4. You've got to go below three if you're going to tease it. Right? You can't tease it.
I don't know if that's an exclusive. I don't know if that's an exclusive rule.
You're wasting your money.
You're wasting your money.
If
all right,
you
that's
think
what
they're going to win and blow them out, then just lay the number. Don't tease it to an awkward number of four.
I actually agree with you. I'd rather buy the extra point at the worst odds and just buy the third point at an alternate spread.
You got to tease through zero and three and six and seven.
If you were to tease, I agree with you, which is why I would buy the alternate spread and just go minus three if I were going to throw it in a parlay like that. All right, we've got one more game, and we'll get to it here coming up in a bit. It's Patriots and Vikings. On the other side, we're going to take a look at Broncos and Panthers. The 3-7 Broncos against, what is it, the 3-8 Panthers? Who knows? Because who cares? Is there a reason to care? We'll dive into it next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.